Welcome to another episode of Fight the Burnout, where we interview police officers, first responders, military, on the topic of burnout, trauma, and how we overcome this and prevent this in policing. We lose more cops to burnout, mental health, than to really anything else. So how do we stop this? How do we stop this epidemic, really? So today, we're going to interview another police officer. He is retired now, police officer and sheriff's deputy. So we're going to get a two-tier here. But I always say this, we're in a world of information these days. Hell, AI can write us things these days and do stuff for us. So we're not, you know, struggling to find information, but what we are struggling to do is take action on this information. I hear it all the time. I need to learn this. I need to learn that. Well, you got Google, but are you actually putting it into action? So I challenge you today, take one, just one thing from today. Put it into action for the next 90 days and create it into a habit, then come back, listen to it again. Also, please do share, like, subscribe so that we can get this out there. And if you do want to donate, there's a donate button on our Anchor site, on our podcast Spotify site, so you can donate there so that we can do more of these and make them bigger and more extravagant and fun. But without further ado, let's introduce Nathan. I'm not even going to pronounce your last name. I'll let you do it, Nathan. But Nathan is an ex-law enforcement, ex-police officer, and sheriff's deputy, and he's going to tell us some stories today. We've had a conversation already before this recording, and he's got some really cool stuff to talk about, so really do make sure you get that pen, that piece of paper, flick on your listening ears. If you're driving in the car, you know, take some mental notes. And without further ado, Nathan, why don't you take it away? Tell us a little bit about yourself, your policing background, what you're doing now. Yeah, just who you are.
Sure, no problem. Nice to be here, Chris. So I'm Nathan Brookie. Last name's kind of hard to pronounce. But anyways, yeah, I was the deputy sheriff for 6 years. I started off working in the jail as a detention officer. Kind of the way you work, you know, at the sheriff's office, you work in the jail, you go to courts, you go to basic law enforcement training, then you kind of go to patrol. Done that for 6 years, and I was a police officer at a smaller police department for 4 years. Became a sergeant, canine handler, narcotics officer, kind of done a little bit of everything there. So now I got out 2012. And got into manufacturing. Now I'm currently a process engineer. So totally 180, right? So, that's kind of my background. One of the things I wanted to share with you all today was the reason I had to leave the sheriff's office. Okay, because it's a lengthy story, but I think it's worth being told. Rewind back to 2005, I was a deputy sheriff on patrol, right? And one of the mistakes I made, you all might think that's not really a mistake, but it is. One of the mistakes I made was I only hung around other police officers, other deputies, okay? So, and going along those lines, right, the second mistake I made was instead of talking it out, I drank it out, okay? Alcohol. If I was off, I was drinking, period. That was the way it was. So that kind of preludes into the story. So I had a really good friend of mine. Well, thought he was a really good friend, right? And so I had some comp time build up. Lieutenant's like, dude, you got to burn this comp time up. And to explain what comp time is, back then, instead of getting paid, overtime, you got to bank your overtime as comp time. So it's like PTO time. So anyways, Lieutenant come up to me, hey dude, you got too much comp time, you need to burn some of it. Okay, cool. So I took like a month off. So a month off, there again, what was I doing when I was off, right? I was drinking, I was partying, I was living it up, burning the candle at both ends. My buddy called me, he's like, hey man, right up, me and his girlfriend and him were just going to hang out, you know, maybe go shoot some pool or something. We had this local little bar we went to, shoot some pool, drink some beers, you know, kind of deprogram what we called it, right? So we get there and make a long story short, him and his girlfriend had a very open relationship, okay?
Okay.
All right. So get there. We're all drinking, partying, having a good time. And he's like, hey, man, I'm going to call this girl. I was like, I don't know, man. I said, let's just us three just kind of hang out. And his roommate was a police officer also. All right. He was on duty. He was getting off at like 7. And so I said, just let's wait till your roommate gets home. I'm blatantly leaving out names, okay?
Probably smart.
Yeah, very smart. But wait till the roommate gets home, and we'll just all kind of hang out, right? We'll go shoot some pool, whatever. He's like, no, I'm going to call this girl, okay? Well, the female gets there, and we're all law enforcement, right? You're trained to see the effects of narcotics, right? So as soon as she walks in the door, her pupils are pinpoint, right? And I'm like, dude, and she's just bouncing off the walls. And I'm like, dude, I don't know where you met this chick at or whatever. Turns out she was, I don't know, I don't know what she did for a living. Anyways.
She did one of those things that wasn't too great for law enforcement to be around.
Probably. I'll just put it like that. We all hang out for a minute. Then I'm like, dude, this girl's getting on her. Let's just go to the pool hall. I knew the owner of the pool hall really well. And at the time, I played league. So we went to the pool hall. And literally, the owner of the pool hall came up to me. He's like, hey, man, you know, you my boy, but you got to get rid of this chick. You know, she's got to go. So we come back to his house. By this time, his roommate then came home, right? And another friend of ours that was actually a supervisor, he was off duty too. He stopped by to hang out, you know, drink some beers too. So we're all downstairs. Them two go upstairs, okay? Well, then all of a sudden, a lot of turmoil breaks out. He comes downstairs. He's like, dude, man, you ain't gonna believe this. I was like, what? What? He's like, man, she's saying I raped her. I was like, say what? You know? And so then the two females start fighting. Okay. So I go upstairs along with the roommate. I go upstairs, break the fight up between the two females. And the roommate takes the female that's alleging the allegations downstairs. So I'm trying to calm the situation down. When I get downstairs, the supervisor that was there is gone. Right? He's uncaught his hat. He is gone.
He's like, hey, yeah, I'm going to exit right here.
Yeah. Hindsight being 2020, very smart move, right?
You should have exited right as well. Right.
But so I get the situation resolved upstairs with the girlfriend, right? Go downstairs and the roommate's like, dude, she took off running across the yard. We're in the city, right? So I don't know what's going on. Well, next thing I know, city police show up, right? So they get there and one of them is actually my cousin. So he's like, and mind you now, I've been drinking for about 4 hours. So
really intoxicated.
I was fairly intoxicated. If I had to guess, I would have blew probably a 14 easily. Yeah. So anyways, but I was in still control of all my faculties, which was a good thing. So
as you said, anybody who knows, as you said, you're drinking a lot off duty. So you've got a bit of a tolerance where you can actually function pretty well, probably with a lot of alcohol, which the sad thing is, it's a lot of police officers. A lot of police officers down that road and they end up in that place and then they end up in these kind of situations.
Exactly. That's part of the reason I'm sharing the story, right? Yeah. But I think it can help a lot of officers. But anyways, so police show up and, you know, of course they're questioning. And I just said, hey man, I see the light on your duty belt on. So I know your camera's recording. Okay, I've had a lot to drink tonight. I'm not answering any questions. I said, first of all, I'm a deputy sheriff, you're a police officer, so you really can't investigate me. Not trying to spread weight or anything like that, right? I really wasn't. I was like, but I have to be investigated by the SBI, okay? State Bureau of Investigation. That's just the way it works. And especially if she's making allegations, right? These type of allegations. So the detectives show up on scene. They're like, we need you to come down to the police department with us. I'm like, okay, cool. I pick up my phone, call a lawyer, and proceed on the police station. So investigators get there, not with the police either, with State Bureau, okay? So investigators get there. This is going on like 6 hours, right? So they get there. One of the smartest things I think I did during this whole thing. So I was transported to the police station by a police officer. Okay. So at the police station, I got up. I said, hey, I need to go use the bathroom. The lieutenant, which was kind of looking at me, he's like, I have an officer escort you. Okay, cool. So he escorted me to the bathroom. So I got up again. Hey, man, I'm going to go outside and get a chew a dip or whatever. Just get some fresh air. Okay, cool. I'll have somebody walk with you. Okay, cool. Just put mental notes there. So basically saying anywhere I went, I was in custody, right?
You're detained pretty much.
I was detained. I was in custody because everywhere I went, I was escorted by a police officer. So they come in, they done questioned the other two, actually the other three, because all of them got questioned. They come to get me, and I said, I'll speak to you freely after I seek legal advice. And they said, well, oh, you're a lawyer nut. No, sir. I'll speak to you freely after I seek legal advice. And so my lawyer shows up. I tell him what's going on. He's like, dude, just, you're good. I'll sit in there with you. If you say anything you shouldn't say, I'll stop you. I'm like, okay. So I just told the story just like it happened there, right? From A to Z.
Yeah.
So get released from the police station. I go, by this time I was definitely sober, but I get back to my buddy's house. I've got two agents inside my vehicle, my POV. Okay. All right.
Where's the warrant for that?
Well, I went exactly that. By the way, by this time, internal affairs lieutenant, captains, everybody's there, right? So I go up to the two agents and I'm like, excuse me, why are you in my car? And they said, well, you know, we've got a search warrant. Okay, cool. And you served that on who? Well, we served it on the homeowner. That's awesome. This is not his vehicle. And I said, can I see a copy of the search warrant? And they handed it to me and I was like, this is for the residents of blank, 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 blank. It says nowhere in here that this vehicle is described or B, this vehicle or the cartilage, right? You didn't say anything about the cartilage in the search warrant, so I slammed both doors on. I was like, get out of my car. And I said, matter of fact, am I under arrest? They're like, no. I said, okay, this car is leaving right now. So we go, we leave, right? And I've got a captain following me. Why? Because he's coming to pick up my patrol car at the house. So I get to my house and back up just a little bit more. And it probably, I don't know, it probably affected my drinking even more. Just about 6 months before that, I lost my mom. So I was dealing with that too in the wrong way. But anyways, so I moved back in with my dad because he was having a hard time, you know. So, but my dad, I don't know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners are Masons, right? So my dad was master of the Masons Lodge at the time. So there you go. So he knew all the lieutenants, all the sheriff, everybody, you know. So we pull up, captain in tow, and he's like, you know, yeah, Nate, you're suspended, of course, with pay, pending an investigation. I said, okay, no big deal. So I went and got my uniforms, badges, gun, radio, loaded all up in patrol car, lieutenant, took off in patrol car. Of course, then I had to explain everything to my father, which was awesome. You know, so.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, Dad, I put myself in a shitty situation, and I really don't know why I'm in trouble.
So we flip on the news, and lo and behold, there is my picture, my buddy's picture, on every stinking news station there is. And that...
I've got to interrupt for a second. Sorry, Nate. What is it that they're allegating that you did at this stage?
At this stage, they're allegating that me, another deputy, and another county employee raped this individual.
So she's claimed that all three of you have raped her. Okay, cool. Yep. I get kind of now why they're doing what they're doing. Okay, sweet. But from what you're saying, they've missed a few steps. But yeah.
They missed some pretty big steps. That started a downward spiral pretty bad. Okay, because once an investigation like that's launched, it's lengthy. And then, okay, you're on every local news station, your picture's right there, right? And I could not turn on local news without seeing me on TV, right? And then, of course, then your phone's blowing up. Nate, what's going on? What in the world happened? You know, da 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 da. Well, it's a tiered investigation. So you went through the initial interview, then you have to go to the internal affairs interviews, then you have to go back through the interviews because her story wasn't lining up, right? So make a long story short, for 3 months, this went on. And my buddies that I thought, there again, were my buddies, were told, do not have any contact with me. So you're out on the island. And I get it. I get everything going on, right? But that can put you in a really dark place. And I went there, right? I went to that dark place. And it was bad. You know, it was to the point of that Glock's looking pretty good. You know, I mean, I'm just being honest.
Yeah. Well, and, I appreciate that, man.
And, you know, my dad helped me through it a lot. And I just had to get out of that county. I had to go. So I was at the beach, and which is roughly about 4 hours from where I live. And really good friend of mine, he was still in law enforcement at the time. And he hit me up next to him, right? He's like, check your GPS on your next tail. I was like, I don't have that activated. He said, I guarantee it's activated right now. I said, dude, are you serious? He's like, yeah. He said, it's activated. They know where you're at. I was like, who knows where I'm at? Who cares where I'm at, right? They said, people do. So sure enough, I went to settings. GPS is located or activated on Nextel. So I just take the SIM card out of it, throw it in the ocean, right? And so the last interview was probably the straw that broke the camel's back. So they called me up to DA's office. By the way, I was really good friends with a lot of the ADAs, kind of worked courts together, right? And so went to the DA's office, of course, state sitting in there, state bureau. And we start going through the A to Z, just like I said. And one of them stood up and slammed his hand down on his desk. He's trying to get me off my game, trying to jitter me, right? And he said, no, you didn't tell us that the first time. I was like, dude, I went through the beginning to the end, right? I said, I know your tactics. You're trying to rattle my cage or whatever you're trying to do. I said, but let's back this train up, okay? And by this time, I done had a trial team. If it needed to go there, I had three of the best lawyers in that county already went and paid them money. So I didn't know where it was going to go, right? So I said, let's back this train up from the beginning. I said, first of all, whenever I was in the interview process, was I intoxicated? He said, you had an odor of alcoholic beverage coming off your breath. Cool. Awesome. Glad you recognized that. I said, but second of all, I was like, so I was intoxicated. I said, when was I ever Mirandized? He was like, well, you're a police officer. It's like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, dude. Whether I'm a police officer or I'm not a police officer. I said, everywhere I went inside that police station, I was escorted. I went outside, I had a police escort. I went to the bathroom, I had a police escort. I went to the vending machine, I had a police escort. I was like, so any reasonable person, that would make them think they're in custody. Okay. So, I said, so I'm in custody and no Miranda. So your case is crap from the get-go. Okay. I'm just letting you know that if you have one. And I said, now I broke the fight up. I was like, so if you want to try to trump up a charge of misdemeanor assault for breaking a fight up, okay, cool. We'll go to trial with that. So after that, I got up and I walked out. I said, this interview's over. Any other interviews we go through can go through one of three people, right? That's the three lawyers.
Yeah.
I said, this is done. And so I get up and I walk out. A couple more weeks go by and I get a call. I was in Virginia deer hunting with my brother-in-law. And Captain calls me. He's like, hey, Nate, great news. You've been exonerated. I was like, yeah, that's great. I was like, for the last 3.5 months, it's not been so great. I said, I haven't heard a word from my command staff. Not the first captain, not the first chief deputy. I did have a really good lieutenant, really good sergeant. Both of them defied orders and would check on me. Okay. Because they was ordered not to talk to me, but they broke those orders. Anyways, they're both retired now, so you know it doesn't matter. But so he's like, the sheriff wants to meet with you, and when would you be back in town? Because I told him I was in Virginia, and I was like, I tell you what, I'll give you as much courtesy as you gave me. When I get there, I get there. That's when I'll be back. So anyways, come back, go to the sheriff's office. Of course, sheriff's not there. Chief deputy's there. He's like, Nate, you know, all this went on. Da, 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 da. I was like, yeah, dude. I said, effectively, starting right now, before you say anything else, I resign. Here's a letter of resignation. And here's the reason why. Right. And I said, dude, nobody had my back. Not the first one of you had my back. I was like, some of my brothers and sisters, yeah, they have my back. And I can name them on one hand, right? I was like, but you as a command staff did not have my back. Here's my letter of resignation. I was like, because I know whenever you work for the sheriff, you work for the will and pleasure anyway. So I knew it was either I was going to part ways with them or they was going to part ways with me. One of the two is going to happen. So I just beat them to the punch. But the kicker to everything was, and I finally figured it out, excuse me, the district attorney was running for re-election. This was his big case. So it didn't sit well. So once I turned in my letter of resignation, Chief asked me, actually Chief Deputy was a really, really good guy. He's like, dude, don't worry about it. I'll get you somewhere, you know, surrounding county, something. He said, I got you a job. Don't worry about it. I was like, effectively right now, man, I cannot police. Right. I said, because the first time I go on the street, oh, that's that dude, you know, that they saw on channel whatever news, I'll lose my crap. Okay. I was like, so I need to take a step back. He said, well, where are you going? I said, district attorney's office. He's like, why are you going there? I said, Settle some uneasy feelings. Okay. First and foremost, I'm a taxpayer of this county and this state. So effectively, he works for me as a district attorney. So, we reversing these roles. We hear it all the time.
I was going to say, how many times have we been told that on the street? Right.
So effectively, we're turning the tables on this guy. So anyways, I get up there, and the guys in working courts are like, oh, crap. You know, dude, come on. Not while I'm here. I'm like, dude, I'm cool. I'm good. My opinion's going to be voiced, though. So I go up to the district attorney's office, and his secretary looks at me. She's like, and she tries to get up to leave. I was like, no. Pop the door, and I need to talk to him. And because they have a locked door, right? Yeah. And she's like, Nate, don't get me involved in this. I was like, you're not involved. Just pop the door and walk out. You're good. And she did. She popped the door. That my two buddies that were ADAs, I was like, hey, man, y'all might want to leave because it's probably going to get heated. So he shut the door on me, of course. He didn't want to talk. And I told him, I was like, how long have you been a resident of this county? He said, that makes no difference. I was like, it makes all the difference. Okay. How long have you been a resident of this county? He's like, you know, 6-7 years. I said, cool, awesome. I've been a resident of this county for 26. I said, my family's been here for over 100. I was like, so your case that you were trying to build against us basically fell apart in front of your eyes? I said, because if you had a good investigators, you didn't have a case to begin with. I was like, but I'm gonna take some time off. And you're an elected official, which is very, very cool for me. Okay. So anybody and everybody, I said, the dude running against you, I don't agree with him. I really don't. I was like, but the dude running against you is my best friend. And he is my best friend from this point forward. And I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure you don't get reelected. So, of course, he calls court security. They come get me and escort me out of the office. No biggie. You know, I didn't make any threats. Just voiced my opinion. Long story short, guess who didn't win re-election?
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
But I learned it was a really good learning experience, right? So I had to back out of law enforcement for a little while. I became a private investigator, which was probably the smartest move I did, right? Because I just worked with myself. Me and my boss, I didn't really have to talk to anybody. I just carried around a video camera, catch cheaters, right? I mean, that was bread and butter.
I've done a short stint in private investigating. It's, you don't have to talk to many people.
No, you don't have to talk to anybody. You're just basically sitting in a window tinted car and with your video camera, right? But I got to step back for a little while, and I got to reevaluate A, what was important, but B, the people you surrounded yourself with, right? Or people I surrounded myself with, and which was all cops, which was, if I had to do all over again, I would might pick one or two, but I would definitely make friends outside of law enforcement.
Well, obviously, so let's jump into that for a second, because obviously you got a redo because you went back to law enforcement after, you know, taking some time away and that. What did you do different that second time in law enforcement?
So the second time in law enforcement, I went to a totally different state, right? Relatively speaking, it wasn't, 30 miles from where I used to work, but it was a totally different state. So the only one that really knew me down there was the chief. And he knew my background. He knew everything that went on, you know. And he's like, Nate, just come on with me. Just give me a shot, right? And I was like, okay. So the second time, what I did different was I had two people. I think that was in law, well, actually three, but three that was in law enforcement. Okay. Now my drinking checked up a little bit. But what I saw was once I got back in law enforcement, I started drinking again, right? Not to that extent.
Why do you think you started drinking again so much?
So I think I started drinking again. It was another way of coping, honestly. I was trying to cope with stuff that I didn't know how to talk it out. So I drank it out, right? I drank, and that was kind of my coping mechanism.
Yeah.
But I did change a lot. I was very, very particular about who I hung around. And I wasn't down there long, and I became canine. And I think that helped a lot, too, because I had to focus that energy on the dog, right? Yeah. It was always, you know, I got to take Wes to get groomed. I got to take Wes to do that. I got to go to training. I got to do this. You know, and that took a lot of energy of you know, where I used to say, well, I'm off, let's go to the bar, you know? So.
Give you a distraction. But,
yeah, it was a good distraction.
What do you, and you feel free to not want to answer this if you don't want to, we'll go down a different road, but what do you think you were running from when it came to going into the bottle? What was the bottle covering up?
So I think the bottle was covering up emotions that I didn't know how to deal with. Things that, you know, you've seen along the way. Honestly, the bottle was covering up some of the betrayal that I felt.
Yeah.
You know, from going through that situation, when I got back in law enforcement, there was a lot of, I don't know, build up stuff that I never went to counsel. I never even tried the avenues of that, right? Because I was brought up, a man's a man, you deal with it, you suck it up, you go on, right? And so, you know, even my dad, to the day he died, the only time I ever heard the words "I love you" was whenever he was dying. That was it, you know? So it was a man's a man, right? And I think that had a lot to do with it, of going into the bottle. And, you know, fast forward to, I got out of law enforcement 2011 or 2012, and I quit drinking in 2015. Cold, done. And I petered off a lot once I got out of law enforcement. It was more of a social drink kind of thing. But I realized that, you know, that's not who I want to be. You're right. I don't want to be coming home sloppy drunk and acting a fool. And what is it solving? It's solving absolutely nothing. Matter of fact, it's exacerbating problems, right? So kind of fast forward to today, when we talked a little bit about this before, but it's immersing yourself around people that are positive all the time. You can't be 100% positive 100% of the time, but if you're around people that are positive, they're positive in their thinking, they're positive in their doing, right? And then you start reading books that are positive and uplifting, that's whenever the changes start.
By stopping drinking, what did you realize from back the first time in law enforcement? Did you realize anything, like, reflecting back? Because I know when you go through, like, my dad stopped drinking quite a few years ago, and that I know he's worked on, like, he's completely changed as a human because of it, because he's worked through a lot of the different stuff that he was hiding from as such. Did you end up getting any of that? Did any of that kind of come to the surface around, like, kind of why you even started getting into the bottle in the first place, the first time you're in law enforcement?
So, you know, like I said, hindsight being 2020, I was not an innocent victim, right? I put myself in that situation. Alcohol exacerbated everything, right? And once you stop, you look back over the years, right? All that time I lost with my daughter from partying and drinking and doing all the stupid stuff, right? And being disconnected. It was just a big disconnect. That was when she was growing up. And did I pay child support? Yes. Did I do the things I was supposed to do? Absolutely. Did I do the things I should have done? Absolutely not. You know, and so whenever you take a step back and you get sober and you look back on your life, you look back and you say, okay, is that something I want to be remembered for? And if it's not, change, right? It's very simple. And, you know, a lot of people say that alcoholism is a disease. It is to a certain point, but it's also a choice. And it's a choice you make every day to pick that liquor bottle up and put it to your mouth. Everybody has choices.
There's an underlying thing that's causing you to want to numb yourself with that alcohol to the level that, you know, that we see so many police officers and first responders do. You know, it's that and the three things that I forget. One of the guys was on, a lady who was, she worked at an Indian reservation in Arizona a couple episodes ago. She was like, I became the statistic. She's like, I went to academy and they're like, you're most likely going to get a divorce. You're most likely going to become an alcoholic and you're most likely going to end up, you know, having some sort of other addiction.
Absolutely.
And she's like, I had a divorce. Oh no. She was like, you'll be involved in domestics. You'll end up probably getting a divorce and you'll most likely end up becoming an alcoholic or having some sort of addiction. She's like, I ended up with a domestic violent husband, ended up getting a divorce from him, and actually I ended up down the bottle for a while.
Absolutely.
And you know, it's interesting because all of those, you know, the domestic one is as we know, as law enforcement officers, a lot of times you can see it from the outside, it's a self-worth thing. You know, you end up getting a divorce because you end up, as you said, not present. You end up off doing something else. And a lot of times that's caused from either going down something that is an addiction. Now, I'm going to say something that a lot of viewers in that probably aren't going to like, but fitness can become an addiction as well. Going into the gym can become an addiction. I used to go, I can say this from personal experience. I never went down the bottle. My dad drank a lot when I was a kid. My parents drank a lot, I should say, when I was a kid. And I used to see them fight all the time. Almost every time after drinking, there'd be some sort of fight. Nothing super bad, but I grew up on a 40-foot sailboat. So they were an inch wall through away from me. So I could hear. don't go to watch that dirty brand. But yes, that's true too. But it was, you know, and so I never went down the bottle, never did the thing. But the gym, I would go, if I had a bad day at work, I'd go to the gym and I'd do stupid things. I remember coming out of law enforcement the first time I went to the punching bag and I was like, this feels weird. I don't know if you've ever hit a punching bag not angry, but it's like, this feels, whoa, what's going on here? I was like, wow, first time, like probably ever, I'm hitting a bag and I'm not angry. So fitness can be that same thing, but going down that bottle, you know, a lot of times you're trying to fight against something or not process something. Was there anything early in your career, like, or, you know, was there anything that you feel like you were trying to not process that maybe you process now that kind of where the bottle was helping you is then kind of stuff it as we do really well a lot of times or try to do really well. We put it in a box and we go, okay, cool. I'm never going to deal with you. I'm going to set it over here because I've got to go to my next job and I don't want to deal with this. Or maybe it was before law enforcement. I know a lot of my clients, a lot of stuff before law enforcement, they just bring it into law enforcement and think that going into law enforcement is going to solve that box, but it isn't.
Yeah, it makes it worse. Trust me. But
the stuff you bring to law enforcement, man, just law enforcement just adds more fuel to that fire.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I grew up in a household where a man's a man. You keep your feelings to yourself, you know. And a lot of the things I saw, I mean, like 1 year we worked suicide after suicide after suicide, you know. And then I think I told you the story of sexual molestation case I worked, and where it was a 11-year-old girl and her two brothers. The guy made the brothers sexually assault the girl. The guy sexually assaulted the girl. But, you know, dealing with stuff like that and not ever, and divorce along the way, right? Had a divorce along the way, and the never really dealt with those feelings, the anger, the hurt, the betrayal, the things you see, you know, just letting it compound and thinking that, well, you know, I'll just go get drunk tonight and all my problems will be good. And then you wake up the next morning with a massive hangover and, you know, your problems are still there, right?
If not worse, because you have the massive hangover and all of a sudden, you know, it's like I talk about this a lot. I mean, I think this will really help people that haven't heard it before, but, you know, we've got those two voices in our heads. We've got the positive, we've got the negative. As law enforcement, the negative one becomes extremely loud, because we see a lot and we see and deal with a lot of negative. You know, that is a massive negative job. Suicides, massive negative jobs. I'm sure that you did some of the notifications to go with those suicides. Extremely negative, because you're like, as cops, especially males just love to fix things. As cops, we want to fix it. We want to make it better. We want to create less pain. We want to stop nasty stuff. There's nothing you can do when it comes to a notification job. It's like, you cannot stop the pain. They have to experience it. But we have those two voices. And I don't know about you. I'd love to know what you do, what you used to do versus what you do now, Nate. We try and shut that negative voice up any way possible. Do more work.
Yep.
Go faster to the jobs. Feel some sort of adrenaline. Throw ourselves into sketchy situations so that, you know, we have to stay focused on what's going on instead of listening to the voice. We jump into the bottle. Jump into drugs. We jump into gambling. Things that we know aren't healthy, that we know we shouldn't do. We jump into training. We do anything so that we can focus our mind on something else and not listen to it. And it sits there and it goes, okay, I'll sit here for a second. And then as soon as you're distracted or you stop doing the bottle or you get the hangover, you wake up in the morning where you're just like, ugh. Then you get the voice of, fuck, I shouldn't have done that last night. And then all of a sudden that negative just goes, cool, here you go. I'm going to hit you like Mike Tyson.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. I mean, you know, you wake up out of a good drunk, right, with a massive hangover, and all of a sudden all those come flooding back, right? And, you know, honestly, what you have to be able to channel it somewhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as law enforcement, we want, like you said, we want to channel it in training. We want to get into a car chase. We want to, you know, catch the next big dope case or whatever. But if, like now, you know, the negativity, like I said, I get around people that are positive, that have a positive outlook on life. And unfortunately, it's hard to do that with people that are in law enforcement, right? So you've got to get around people that are outside of that realm, right? That take this, for example. If you flip on any news station you want to, I don't care which one it is, flip on any of them, it's going to be negative, 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 negative. Turn it off. Turn the TV off. I know it's cops. You want to see what's going on in the surrounding counties and catch up on everything that's going on. Turn it off, right? Pick up your earbuds, put a podcast in, put an audio book in, and be able to channel it that way, right? And there's nothing wrong, not a thing in the world wrong, with going and talking to somebody that's not in law enforcement, right? That's key. Because, I mean, don't gross them out and tell them all the horror stories and all the dead bodies and all the good, you know. But if something's really bothering you, you know, be able to talk about it. Be able to talk about it with somebody outside of the shield, right? And that way, you know, you're getting a totally different perspective from somebody like that. And I guess that's, like my wife now, she's a nurse. So, you know, she sees the blood, guts, and gore and all that good stuff. But, you know, talk to your significant other. Don't shield them from it. Because if you shield them from it, you're creating a wall. And that wall cannot be broke through.
Once, the number one thing my wife and I wish we had done is that I would come home and I would tell her what my day was like.
Yep.
What pissed me off, what made me happy, what, all of it. I don't have to go into the fact that I found a heart and this is what it looked like and all the details, but to be perfectly honest, they're going to get involved in it. They're gonna talk about it. And if you can communicate that back and forth with each other, like if she can be like, oh my God, that job, like that freaked me out. Okay, cool. Then you can be in that place of being able to help her by letting her process it out because it doesn't affect you at all. But this is the conversation I feel like a lot of law enforcement, I want to talk to you about this one as well, Nate, and because I think this is a big thing, communicating with your significant other. You hear so often that people go, don't tell the stories to your significant other. Well, now your significant other has no idea why you're pissed off and you're wanting to punch a hole in the wall, or why you're sitting there on your horn hardcore when the guy cuts you off.
Yep, absolutely. You know,
whereas if you came home, like I remember I had a partner of mine get assaulted that completely threw me. And I talk about this story all the time. And it's not, you know, it's for me, it was a big deal. My partner got assaulted when I went to go arrest somebody. She left the job that was the last straw on the camel's back for her. And she was like, I'm out. And I took it completely personally. I came home, told her what happened that morning, bawled my eyes out on the back step, and then shut it down, put it in a box, and put it in the back dark dungeon. Never talked about it again. Then when he got sentenced and he got 6 months, and here's the cops in the States will love that, and the U.S. will love this because they're always going on, especially recently, about sentencing. He got 6 months home detention at his uncle's house, and he could only leave if he was working for his uncle. And $400 reparation to the officer. Now, we got him remanded for 3 months in the very beginning, but, you know, what's that? He gets to watch ESPN every day. But, you know, so until he got sentenced, then I got pissed off again. But then I went, I can't be angry because an angry cop's not a good cop. So I took those emotions and I stuffed them away as well. Never talked about any of this to anybody. Never let the emotions flow through. If you could rewind, Nate, back to your very beginning of your career, what would be one to two things that you would implement and make habit? We're going to give those little tips that I said for everybody to listen for. I'm going to literally get Nate, we're going to lay them out right now. So you can just grab one of them. Nate, what would be the one to two things that you would do differently at the start now with what you know and make it a habit? Make it a non-negotiable. I am not doing like this. Just does not change. I do this every time, and it would make the biggest impact to your policing career.
So, for me, one of the biggest things would be would not hang out at local cop parties. I wouldn't do it, and wouldn't drink. That's the second key, right? I think one of the biggest things I would do would be find that person, male, female, whoever, that I could share what was going on, you know, what was going on in my head, what was going on at the job, and just be able to talk it out. I think that would have been probably a career changer for me. Might have still been in, right? Because like you said, we compartmentalize and all these bad things we see and that's happened, you know, the court cases that's going south, because it's going to happen. There's no two ways about it. You're going to have those cases. I can probably name 10 right off the top of my head that either the person got a slap on the wrist that should have been in prison, or something to that extent, right? But if you can take that and be able to talk it out with someone, hey man, this, you know, I had this case, this is what happened. Stupid judge, you know, only give them, you know, 10 days in-house arrest, whatever the case may be. And what do you think about that? Oh, and I'm going to tell you, if it's somebody outside of law enforcement, they're probably going to say, I can't believe the judge did that. They're going to be like, yeah, that's what's going on with our judicial system. I was like, just remember that because you're a voter too. Tell your friends. But if there was more transparency like that, I think that would alleviate a lot of the mental stress off of the officer itself, him or herself.
And add on to that real quick, because it's great going and having what I call bitching sessions where we just do it out. But that person that's receiving, if you're listening and you're that person that's receiving these, or you're a significant other, or you're a spouse, or even you're another officer, then you can counteract yourself so easily with this. When you say that, oh, this case and the person got dismissed and there's all this stuff, yes, they'll go, a civilian will go, oh my God, like, really? That's what happens if they have no idea about law enforcement. But as that other person shifting it back, and we talked about this before, shifting it back and getting the officer to find a positive out of it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Let's tell that story right fast.
Yeah.
Because that's a really good story. So I preluded to it a little bit. I'll condense it. But anyways, the sexual assault case of the 11-year-old and the two brothers. Long story short, I went to the ER that night for a simple assault call. I get there, get meet by the rape crisis counselor, and she's like, hey, are you here to take the assault report? I'm like, yeah, the simple assault. She's like, no, absolutely not. She said, this is a sexual assault on a minor. Wait a minute, you know? So long story short, the guy got arrested. I was able to go in on the arrest with him. Basically we nailed him, right? The victim had to have a photographic memory. I mean, just everything she said was spot on everything that was, all the evidence that was found was spot on, exactly where she said, exactly what happened. So fast forward, the guy's in federal custody because he transported the kids across state lines. A lot of different things happened. But anyways, he's in federal custody. I was Christmas shopping for my daughter. And I was...
Sorry, really quick, Nate, what did he get? What did he get sentence-wise?
The
offender.
30-plus.
30-plus. Okay, cool. Do you know, did he serve that 30-plus?
He's still in prison right now.
Okay, cool. So he got a fairly decent sentencing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's gone for life because he was already in his...
Did you, before we go into the next section, because it's really, I really want to just kind of see, did you feel like coming out of that whole situation that justice was served, or did you feel like he should, like, it was like, this is still screwed up, he needs more, or any of that kinds of, those kinds of things? Did you feel like there was any kind of, you know how cops get, where they're like, oh my God, like, this just, you know, this wasn't enough, or this wasn't done right, or anything along those lines? Like, was there any negative connotation that came around it?
Yes. So let's back up to the beginning. While we was at the hospital, the mother and the father didn't know what was going on, right? So me and the rape crisis counselor had to break the news to the mother and the father, right? That, A, basically your family's destroyed, okay? Yeah. All your kids have been a part of a sexual assault. And the dad, being a man, right? And given his shoes, I don't know, just to be frank, if I would have the wherewithal within me to do what he did. Okay. Because he had that 1,000-yard stare, and he blatantly told me, he said, I'm gonna go kill him. He's dead. So I had to jump in front of him and calm him down. Sir, you know, let me do my job. If you let me do my job and it's done right, this dude's going to prison for the rest of his life. Let me do my job. And I had to remind him, I said, right now, your family needs you. You've got a daughter and two sons. They need you. Okay. And that weighed heavy. That weighed really, really, really heavy. Because could I fault him for wanting to go kill that man? Absolutely not. You know, but that being said, you're still an officer, right? So it's like I told him, I said, you know, first of all, you done told me you was going to kill him. So that's premeditated. Okay. So if you go out these doors and you go kill that man, then that's premeditated first degree murder all day long. I was like, you're ruining your life whenever your kids need you the most. And so I kind of talked him down out of that. And it started weighing on me after the guy was arrested. We went through the interview. And I mean, he just basically laid it all out. He confessed. But after hearing him confess, that really weighed on me, right? Of the torture these kids went through. And I'll kind of fast forward to afterwards, right? I was Christmas shopping for my daughter, and I kind of get blindsided by three kids, boom, 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 you know. One of them grabbed my leg, the other one grabbed the other leg, the other one's hugging me, you know, and it's those three. And the mom and dad come up crying, you know, and thanking me for doing my job. I just done my job. That's all I did. And, you know, I lost a lot of sleep over that case. I just couldn't, I didn't channel it, right? I didn't talk to anybody about it. So after that weekend, I was going to work, and I threw all my uniforms in the patrol car, along with the radio charger, whole nine yards. And we have a hill, or we called it the hill. We have a section that the spare patrol car set in. So I just drive around to all intents and purposes, I was going to quit. Well, the lieutenant, like I said, I had a really good lieutenant, really good sergeant, been in law enforcement forever. He rolls up right beside of me. He knew something had been eating at me. He just didn't know what. And he rolls up there beside of me. He's like, "What you doing?" Because I had on plain clothes, you know, and I was supposed to be coming into work, my shift. And I was like, "LT," I said, I don't know if I can do this job anymore. He's like, "Okay, why?" And I told him about the case, you know. He's like, "Hmm." He said, "Well, I tell you what." He said, "If you can't handle it," he said, "I do not need you on my shift. I do not need you with this office. I don't need that." He said, "Because if you're not focused," he said, you could get one of my officers hurt. He said, "I'm not going to stand for that. I'm not going to have that." He said, "But let's rewind this a little bit." I was like, "Okay." He said, "Is the dad alive and out of prison?" I was like, "Yeah." He said, "Is the mom alive?" Yeah, the three kids, are they alive? Are they, you know, yes, they've got issues, but are they going to counseling, getting stuff worked out? I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "The suspect, is he in custody?" I was like, "Yeah." "Will he ever get out of prison?" I was like, "He'll probably die in prison." He's like, "I think you've done your job." He said, I think, he said, "You can look at this two different ways." He said, "You can look at the negative that happened to that family." He said, "Or you can look at the positive that happened to that family." Right? He said, "It sucks it happened. No doubt. It just sucks." He's like, "But at the end of the day," he said, "they're still a family." Right? "And the bad guy's in prison." He's like, it's all in how you look at it. He's like, "So if," he said, "I would chalk that up as a win." He's like, "Yeah, it sucks it happened, but it's still a win because effectively everybody's still alive." He said, "And the dirtbag's in jail," right? And that kept me from quitting, right? And I wish there were more supervisors and lieutenants and captains out there that could sit an officer down whenever they went through something like that and kind of lay it out like that, right? Because like you said, we always focus on the negative.
Well, it doesn't even have to be a sergeant, super, or lieutenant, captain, commander, anything to do that. It can literally be your partner. It can literally be one of the other colleagues that you work with. It can be some admin person downstairs in the dungeon that can do that. That can do that for you. And I'm glad that you ended up telling that story, because I remember we talked, you know, a couple weeks ago about the, you know, you told me that story, and it is so impactful, because that right there shifted you to do more law enforcement. It shifted you to actually shift in the positive. Now, here's the key that I want to take away as we kind of start to wrap up, everybody, is anybody can do that for anyone. If you get vigilant with it, if you turn it into a habit, if you start to look for the positives. If I ever thought about, or if I ever went back to law enforcement, I would put a thing in place with my wife that at the end of every shift, I talk to her. And if I come home in the middle of the night, if I shift as a swing shift and I'm coming home at 2 a.m, when I wake up in the morning, I talk to her, whether it's calling her on the phone, whether it's whatever it is, we talk for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. We talk about it just to get it out. And if I need to talk more about it, or if she's like, hey, I feel you need to talk more about this, then at night before I, at some stage that day, we talk about it before I go back to work. Because she's my person. And if she gets to a point where she's like, Chris, you need to find a different person, then I go, okay, cool. And we've had this. Like, I get coaching once a week by somebody already. Because she turned to me and she's like, Chris, I can't be your coach and your wife. And like, I can't have all these hats. And I was like, okay, cool. So I went and found another coach. We still talk about it, but it just gives us an opportunity to talk deeper into stuff when we do. And I'm not having to lay all the piddly stuff and work through all the different snake trails and everything to get there. But having those people out there, and this is the power of coaching, therapy, whatever you know, whatever one you want to do. But as you said, having that, if you could have that every shift and you could go through the top tier things, or even anybody could come and go, guys, I'm just struggling a little bit with the fact that the DA just keeps coming after us. Okay, cool. Because it's a valid thing in the U.S. at the moment. The DA is coming after officers. Okay, cool. Cool, guys, what can we do about it? What's the positive that we can make out of it? Cool, it's going to make us better cops, because we've got to look after our back. We got to be further above board. We got to step ourselves up. We got to be the best that we can be, which is why we joined this job. Different things like that, you know, having those different things. Oh, you know, Sarge, I went to this really nasty, you know, this notification. It's just this guy, like, and I'm going to speak, this is a job that I went to. He just collapsed, and I don't know how to process it. If you don't even know how to articulate that, it's like, Sarge, I just don't know what the hell's going on, but I'm angry lately.
Yeah.
I'm pissed off, Sarge. I'm pissed off. Let the Sarge ask you some questions. If he's a sergeant, he should have enough know-how to ask, or use the other guys in the squad to bounce the thing off. Guys, yeah, you feel angry. Yeah, we're all feeling angry. Okay, cool. What's the number one thing we're most angry about? We're angry about the DA. Okay, cool. Let's talk about the DA.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and quit compartmentalizing. That's the biggest thing, I think, across any kind of emergency services, is we get so focused on compartmentalizing because we don't want to upset somebody, or, you know, make them have a bad day or whatever. But, you know, sometimes you're the one needing to vent. Sometimes they're the ones needing to vent. And, you know, we need to realize that and pick up on that. That needs to start from FTO up, right?
Day one.
So, you know, even, and I'll be honest, so the jail was some of the most, I got more fights in the jail, working the jail, than I did on patrol. So that's another area of people that a lot of people don't understand, like detention officers and correction officers. And, you know, dude, that job sucks, you know, because you feel like you're an inmate alongside of them sometimes, but you know, and that's just a big area I think that's lacking a lot is being able to talk, you know, talk it out. And don't close people off. I was the master at that, right? I was the master at, oh, Nate's fine. Nate's cool. You know, I was the rock. When it really, right? I was the big marshmallow under a hard shell.
I mean, the marshmallow covered in the hard shell chocolate. And it's just like,
yeah.
Well, Nate, last question I have for you, and I want to say thanks for being here. Thanks for opening up. Thanks for talking about it. You know, all the different things. What's your top tip to self-happiness?
Top tip to self-happiness. So, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to find your why you do what you do. And everybody's going to be different. Right. Some people's is going to be family. Some people's going to be other things. But my tip to self-happiness would be find your why. Find your why you do what you do. And once you find that why, concentrate on it. Right. So if your why is your family, okay, the reason you go out there every night, you put on that gun, you put on that badge is to support your family and provide a living for your family. Okay. Remember why you're doing what you're doing. It's for your family. So they get the best of you, not the rest of you. And if you've got to figure out how to give them the best of you. Okay. And if that means talking to a counselor, doing whatever you've got to do, prolonging your life, going to the gym, getting healthy, because that's another area we didn't touch on, but a lot of law enforcement officers are not very healthy. For me, you know, my why was basically my family. You know, now definitely my family. So what wouldn't you do for your family at the end of the day? So now for, you know, like I said, everybody's why is going to be different. For your single guys out there, their why might be, who knows? But our girls, but find your why, then focus on that why, because it's a distraction too, right? But it's a good distraction. It's a good distraction technique, is focusing on that.
No, I think you're spot on there. You know, I run a training that's called, it's a 7-step process to find your why. And it goes deep down into yourself so that you can then apply it to things like your family and your self-care and your you know, your work and all of that. My why is to help myself, you know, help myself and others truly be seen. That's, you know, my why is actually to be seen. It's why I thrive at doing this. Why I thrived as a cop, because I could help myself be seen. And then I could also help others be seen. And so it's that thing, you know, and then you apply that to the relationship. It's like, okay, cool. I'm going to work now so that I can be seen, so I can see what I'm capable of. And then I'm going to come home and see what my wife's capable of and be there for her. And so it is. And if anybody's interested in learning about their why, if they're struggling with their why, if they want to know more, just send me an email at createfromwhy@gmail.com. And I'll organize the time to walk you through that, because like you said, the why is so important. And then it's the focusing on it every single day. And the easy way to do that, and I'll give everybody some free tips right now, is one, put it in the front of your notebook. Like, literally put it in the front of your work notebook. So when you turn up to work, you have it. Put it in your locker. Put it in on your sun visor, in your patrol car, if you have your own take-home one. Put it places where you'll see it all the time, so you can keep reminding yourself. So you can keep staying on point with it. Because yes, like you said, Nate, the why is so important. If you lose that why, you stop focusing on it, you'll go down the wrong road. Well, Nate, before I wrap up, is there any last words that you'd like to drop on everybody?
No, guys, gals, we need you. we need you. Okay. Even though I might not wear a badge anymore, hats off to you. Okay. We need you in law enforcement. We need law enforcement officers. We need first responders. We need military, right? And you do the hardest job in the world for the least amount of money in the world. So I just want everybody to know you still got my respect. Anytime you ever need anything, mbrookie@hotmail.com, hit me up. We'll jump on the phone, whatever we need to do. But, you know, keep on doing what you're doing. Don't let other people's feelings and emotions and stuff like that take you out of the job. Okay. If it's ingrained in you and that's what you want to do for the rest of your life, do it. Just figure out ways to be able to channel your emotions, right? And keep yourself in check and do it in the right way. Don't do it in the wrong way like I did it, like so many other people's done it. You know, I have nothing against people that drink. If you want to drink, that's cool. Just keep it in check, right? And just like anything else, you can go overboard with it and have too much fun or whatever. But yeah, I mean that's why I want to tell everybody is that we respect you, love you, and keep on doing what you're doing. Because you got one of the hardest jobs out there right now, especially in today's climate. Like Chris alluded to, you know, district attorneys are coming after cops right and left. Always keep this in the back of your mind. You live in a glass house, right? Everything you do on duty or off duty can come back to bite you. So do it by the book, do it right. And, you know, you got my support.
Yeah. No, I love that. Thanks, Nate. Well, thank you everybody for listening. And again, this is Fight the Burnout. It's a podcast for police officers. And I want to remind you that you are cared about, as Nate said, and that there are a ton of tools that we talked about today and strategies. And if you need more, please do reach out to us. You can find out more information. You can download some free resources at createfromwhy, that's createfromwhy.com, or email me at createfromwhy@gmail.com. And we'll get you some free resources if you need more, or we'll just organize a time to have a conversation and we'll go from there. Please do, if you can, donate just $1 to support us. We look forward to getting you more information, getting you more interviews like this one. And till next time, train hard, test easy, and stay safe out there.